Our guest today is Joe DeGeneva, who has served as the United States Attorney for the District of Columbia, Chief Counsel and Staff Director of the Senate Rules Committee, and Counsel to the Senate Judiciary, Governmental Affairs, and Select Intelligence Committees. Joe is a founding partner of the Washington, D.C. law firm DeGeneva & Tunsing, and is a frequent guest commentator on many national radio and TV shows. Joe, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
You know, there are many people in the media who insisted early on that the Mueller investigation was a hoax, but I've always felt that you were the most unequivocal about it from day one, and I appreciated that. So I'd like to start out today by you telling us what some of the key factors were that made you so sure from the outset that the Russian collusion story was a fabrication.
Well, the most important clue of all was James Comey's news conference on July 5th, 2016, where he illegally and improperly and unethically exonerated Hillary Clinton from all criminal liability under the Espionage Act. Once Comey did that, in the manner in which he did it, it was readily apparent that the Obama Justice Department and FBI had been totally politically corrupted, and that that decision bore no relationship whatsoever to the facts underlying the case. Subsequent to that, you know, a whole bunch of facts came out which verified that. And, you know, eventually there was an IG report, and there's another one coming out from the DOJ ID. But that was it. I mean, that anybody who's ever been a professional federal prosecutor knew at that moment that the jig was up, that this was a fix, and that what it meant was they wanted her to be elected president. And so that meant automatically they didn't want him to be president. And so therefore, they were going to make sure that that happened. I didn't need Strzok and Page text messages to tell me that. It was fairly obvious to anyone who was a sentient being and had had some investigative experience that that was what was going to happen. Subsequently, obviously, little bits and pieces we found out about. Once the spying stuff came out, it was fairly obvious what was underway. And the notion that Rod Rosenstein would appoint a special counsel was an absolute joke. Rosenstein is a total fraud. He gave a speech last night up in New York where he was pretending to be very upset with the Obama administration. He was a toady for them, and he was a disgrace to the department. Bill Barr did the only Machiavellian thing that any good attorney general could do. He kept them close to his vest as this played out, so Rodden couldn't be outside the department leaking, which he did regularly from inside the department. So, you know, this was pretty simple stuff for a good federal investigator, and of course the press was on the side of Comey and the bad guys, and they still are. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be very interesting to see how the current DOJ investigates the Brennan, Clapper, Comey cabal, which was clearly a criminal conspiracy, and we'll see how it plays out. I have, by the way, Bill Barr is the greatest choice that could have possibly been made. The only person in the United States who could have taken the job and done it the right way.
So you're confident he's really going to go after the other side now and see what was really happening?
Oh, God, yeah. He's not going to let this pass. Listen, he worked at the Central Intelligence Agency. He's been, you know, he's been Attorney General twice. He's been the head of the Office of Legal Counsel, which is the lawyer for the entire federal government. He's been the head of Verizon. I mean, let me tell you something. This guy knows where the bread is buttered. Let me tell you why I have faith in him. First of all, I've known him for 30 years. I consider him a friend. Second, when he was announced, there were shudders at the FBI and the Department of Justice because the career people know you can't fool Bill. He knows where everybody's buried in both of those buildings. There was no way they were going to do to him what they did to Jeff Sessions, the little fool who became attorney general for a short period of time, but short enough to do incredible damage to this president.
So when Comey, and I'm just talking as a layman, when he got out there and gave that speech and then shocked everybody by saying, well, no serious prosecutor would da-da-da-da-da, you knew from your legal experience that this whole thing was not kosher, the way it was being presented, and you knew that Comey shouldn't even be out there talking. It should have been, if I understand it correctly, Loretta Lynch, right?
That is correct. And I knew right then that the investigative process had been corrupted. And, of course, everything subsequent to that shows that it was. They allowed him to delete emails. There were no subpoenas. There were no search warrants. There was no grand jury testimony. All of the usual investigative techniques were eschewed. He immunized lawyers and witnesses with no, so that there was nobody left to prosecute. The notion, just putting aside the tarmac meeting between Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch, but what really, really kicked it in and made it clear that the fix was in, Loretta Lynch didn't say a word, even though this was her job and she had not formally recused herself from the Clinton investigation. She made it look like she had, but she later said, no, I never issued a formal recusal. But here's what just teed it up for me. Obama didn't fire Comey, and neither does Lynch. And the reason was very simple. Comey had the goods on him. He was J. Edgar Hoover at that point. He knew that the spying that had gone on for 4 years prior to that, illegal spying by the FBI, he had that over the president's head, President Obama. He had it over Sally Yates and over John Carlin, the head of the National Security Division. So Comey was doing what Hoover had done for years. He was blackmailing people, and that's what he did when he went to see President Trump and told him about the dossier and the salacious details. That was blackmail.
Great. I'm going to get back to Comey in a little while, but I want to address this, the way the fake news media has responded to the Mueller report. You'd think that the report had concluded that Trump was guilty of collusion. To me, it's amazing. What's your take on the media's reaction to the Mueller report? Wasn't there a headline in the New York Times or somewhere where I forgot what the headline was. It was like, the report proved everything, and it proved the opposite. What's your take on that, Joe?
Well, this is an example of why the media is held in such low regard. I mean, when institutions like the Washington Post and the New York Times completely capitulate to being arms of the Democratic Party because of their hatred for Trump, they've lost all value to the American people. And, of course, their biggest problem is that they're destroying true journalism as they walk this incredible suicide walk along with Comey and Brennan and Clapper. And the incredible damage that they have done to the body politic by insisting on selling this nonsense about Russian collusion is really quite sad to see. But it's also worse than sad. It's very, very, makes me extremely angry as a citizen, as a lawyer, as somebody who cares about the rule of law. All this claptrap about how the president is a threat to the rule of law and the Constitution, he's anything but. It's the press that's the threat to the Constitution and the rule of the law by purveying false information in a republic, in a democratic republic. I mean, this is really quite serious stuff. And because they become so partisan, the press, and so determined to throw him out of office, they've lost all the integrity and the legitimacy that they would otherwise be entitled to. I don't know how they get it back. I really don't. But the only way they could ever get it back is to say, we were wrong, he was right, and we got to find out who the people were that tried to overthrow a duly elected president. That's never going to happen. So the only substitute for that is an attorney general like Bill Barr, who's going to conduct a legitimate criminal investigation of the people who tried this coup d'etat, because it was a coup d'etat, and then have him issue a report and explain as much as he can. And if there are indictments, let those indictments speak for themselves. But the press is a lost cause, and that's because they hate Trump. They hate everything about him. They hate what he stands for. The wrong guy won, in their view. She was supposed to get it. She didn't. They're just really quite silly, juvenile people. The press has become adolescent and sophomoric in its approach to the news, and as a result, I don't read the New York Times. I mean, I get it just so I can, if there's something I have to see, it's there, but they have a good crossword puzzle.
Now, there's a really important thing I've been anxious to ask you because I don't understand it. Maybe it's just me, but it seems like a very important point is being missed in all this, and that's that Rod Rosenstein repeatedly told Trump he was not a target of the investigation. And if that were the case, My question is, why is the entire 400-plus page report just about Trump? And if it was really, it really was about Russian collusion, why did Mueller not look into the activities of Hillary and everyone else involved on the Democratic side? And I haven't heard anybody talk about that.
Well, this was clearly an investigation of Trump, and Rosenstein lied to him, and that's why Comey wouldn't say publicly that he wasn't the subject of an investigation. There was no reason for Comey not to do that. Comey didn't say it publicly because he knew it wasn't true. Of course Trump was the subject of the investigation. And the Rosenstein role here is really quite corrosive and nefarious. I mean, he is without any doubt, a malign and malignant figure in this entire thing. Remember, none of this would have happened. There would have been no special counsel but for Rod Rosenstein deciding that he just didn't like what the president told Lester Holt of NBC News one night. That's a juvenile approach to this. You have to understand that Rosenstein is a careerist. They all love to talk about he spent 30 years in the department. That was about 29 years too long. And in fact, the problem with Rosenstein is it's always about him. He's a careerist. It's always his next job. And just watching him try to cozy up to the president and to the anti-press approach now is really, really, really wonderful because it is classic Rod Rosenstein. And as far as Mueller is concerned, he knew within 2 months that there was no collusion. He should have folded up shop and gone home. But he didn't want to because this was never about the Russian thing. It was about trying to get Trump and frame him and get him to commit perjury. And the most important thing for them to do that was to get him to agree to an interview. And every one of the president's lawyers said, no way do you ever talk to him. It isn't going to happen. And he'll never be able to subpoena you because he can't win in the Supreme Court because he can't show that there's an underlying crime or anything else. And without that, he doesn't get you. And that's exactly what happened. But Mueller says in his report that he didn't try to get the president's testimony by subpoena because it would have prolonged the investigation. That's total BS. He didn't issue a subpoena because he knew he was going to lose in the Supreme Court.
You know, I was going to get to that later, but I'll ask you now, do you think there's ever, or I should ask you from a legal standpoint, because that's where you're coming from, are there any grounds to take legal action against Mueller, because I don't think there was any doubt in anyone's mind that he knew the day he walked into the office, if not before, and certainly within a couple months after, that there was no collusion. Is there any law that he has technically broken that he could be called to task on?
No. I think he's probably violated some ethical standards and certainly prosecutorial standards of the Department of Justice, and I don't think Bill Barr will ever do this out of respect for Bob's career, but there may be a report issued subsequent to all of this, which includes commentary on the way the special counsel handled his role, and that will be very, very critical of him. I don't know who's going to write that, but I think Congress, certainly the Senate, is going to have a role to play in that in the hands of Republicans. The House, of course, is interested in nothing. They're not interested in anything involving the truth. The Democrats are just thugs. And all they want to do is just dirty up the president for the 2020 election. But if he stands tall, the president does his job. Economy, 3.2 GDP now, stunning numbers, unemployment, employment, you name it, he'll win. And the pygmies that are running against him are really quite remarkably ugly people, politically ugly.
You know, taking this thought a step further, many Americans, including myself, are bothered by the fact that so far none of the real criminals had been indicted. I mean, you don't even need to have a trial to know that Loretta Lynch, Brennan, Clapper, McCabe, Susan Rice go right down the line, and especially bothered by Samantha Power. How dare she, to borrow your phrase, how dare she unmask 200 people? What has she got to do with it? And all the way up to Barack Obama himself, what part, if any, do you think Barack Obama played in the Russian collusion?
I think he was aware of the investigation. I think he was aware of the tactics that were being used. I think he clearly authorized it by not stopping it. He had been briefed. We know of at least one meeting in the White House on January the 5th, 2017. There must have been others. Susan Rice wrote a memo for the record on January 20th, 2017, memorializing the January 5th meeting where she said the president emphasized that everything had been done, quote, by the book, end quote. Well, what the hell does that mean? And why was he saying that? What was he afraid of? The answer is very simple. They were out to get Donald Trump. The notion that they had a good faith belief that he might have been an agent of Russia or that the Russians were trying to use him is ludicrous. There was no evidence of that whatsoever, and everybody knew it. What happened was there was quite a bit of illegal electronic surveillance by the Obama administration over a four-year period prior to the 2016 election. The FISA court has already written about this and condemned the Obama administration, Justice Department, and FBI for these illegalities. It is a matter of public record. Not many people have read the opinion. There's been very little writing about it in the press. But the FISA court, in an order written by Judge Collier that's 98 pages long, announced to the world that the Obama Justice Department and FBI used four contractors to illegally access NSA databases about Americans. Those accesses were then used to unmask Americans and then leak information about them to the press. Those acts were all violations of the Espionage Act and will be the subject of investigation by the Attorney General if they are not already being investigated by John Huber, the U.S. Attorney in Utah. So believe me, there's a lot to do here, and there's a lot to be done that's very important.
Let's talk about obstruction for a second. My question is, how can a person be exonerated of obstruction of justice if he's never been formally accused of obstruction in the first place? And it seems to me that Mueller just as easily could have said that he didn't reach a conclusion about Trump's robbing a bank. He wasn't accused of obstruction any more than he was accused of robbing a bank. Or am I missing something?
The Mueller report, which goes into this thing, says that he could not accuse the president of a crime because of the facts, but he did not exonerate him. Now, that's not his job to exonerate the president. His job is to bring a charge or shut up and file a report about what he did and didn't do. Mueller was a cover for the original illegal surveillance that went on by the Obama administration. Whether or not Bob was aware of that and whether or not he did it knowingly, I do not know. But he ended up being the tool of a cover-up. But it didn't work because Trump – let's put it this way. Let's look at your question just as obstruction. Suppose you were accused of a bank robbery at the Bank of America on First and Main. And you were investigated for 2 years for it. And at the end, you found out that the bank had never been robbed and that the bank robbery was made up just so they could investigate you and get all your records. That's what happened to the president. He was accused of a crime that he didn't commit, but also a crime that never happened. And they spent 2 years trying to ruin his life, his family's life, and the lives of his friends and campaign workers. That is disgusting by any sense of the word, and it needs to be accounted for. And that's what Barr is going to do.
Joe, speaking of FISA judges, I've been concerned from the beginning who these guys are and why you're not hearing from them. I don't know how much you know about it personally, but I'm just wondering if anybody's investigating them, if they said anything, because I've always been suspicious, especially since that, I think it was a text by Peter Strzok, about he didn't want it to look like they were too cozy. I've always wondered, in all honesty, if they were in on this whole thing.
The FISA judges were used. I'm not at all sure that they didn't miss a few things and weren't as thorough as they should have been. But we do know that the FISA judges have, in fact, spoken with the Department of Justice about the Carter Page FISA warrant and about other spying by the Obama FBI and Justice Department. I would give Judge Collier, the chief judge, extremely high marks for the way she exposed the illegal spying done by the four FBI contractors during the Obama administration. And it is apparent to me that a number of the other FISA judges involved in the Carter Page warrant have, in fact, spoken to the Justice Department. It's not their job to be public about stuff like this. That's not the role of a judge. However, they do have the responsibility and because they are going to be witnesses in these cases. They were lied to. And as such, they're going to have to either testify or provide information about what happened when these documents were presented to them and what was done. So we'll see. But I don't blame them. I just don't know that they were as thorough as they should have been. Some of them. Four different judges looked at the Carter Page warrant. Not one. Four.
So they don't have to read it and study it and make a determination. They can go on the word of the person from
No. They have to read it. They have to study it. They have to go into it. The question is, if you're given false information, you're not going to know that as a judge. Now, they turned down four or five FISA warrants on Carter Page. And it wasn't until the Steele dossier was created that they got him. So that tells you a lot about what was going on and why the Steele dossier became so important and why, since it is a fraudulent document, totally unverified, never should have been submitted to the court. I don't blame them for being lied to by the FBI and by senior Justice Department officials. That, to me, is one of the great crimes of this whole thing, the way they lied to the court.
I'm probably in the minority on this, but ever since Mueller started handing out indictments for crimes that had nothing to do with Russian collusion, and including Paul Manafort, by the way, I've contended that all convictions arising from those indictments should be thrown out. Now, granted, I'm speaking from a layman's point of view, but, you know, poison tree, poison fruit. So what I want to know from you is whether there's any legal precedent for throwing out some of these convictions that came about only because people got caught up in Mueller's fishing expedition.
Well, here's what can be done. Let's assume that Bill Barr conducts a really thorough investigation and comes up with a lot of stuff and ultimately concludes that the genesis of this entire investigation was the result of a fraudulent approach to the FISA court and lies to a number of other federal agencies, and that even the appointment of Mueller was tainted by that very fact. The Attorney General could order the dismissal of all the indictments against all of these people and could order that any convictions that the government wants to vacate those convictions because it can no longer vouch for the credibility of the government's witnesses and evidence. That could occur. Is it likely to occur? I doubt it. But I would assume that some people will get pardons and some people will get commutations when the investigative process involving Barr is over.
Yeah, I kind of feel, I don't know Paul Manafort, but I kind of feel sorry for him no matter what crimes he's committed. He wasn't an axe murderer, obviously. And it just seems strange to me that he gets roped into this thing, this fraudulent investigation, and Mueller says, oh, okay, let's go over here now. This has nothing to do with Russian collusion. My gosh, you could do that to
That prosecution of Mueller for these FARA violations and tax violations was a disgrace. It was totally unnecessary. The Justice Department had already passed on that prosecution once, decided it wasn't worth pursuing. And the only reason they pursued him, as the judge said in Virginia, was to squeeze him to get him to say something about Trump or even make it up. So, I mean, that's classic Andrew Weissman technique. You know, if you don't tell me what I want to hear, I'm going to charge your wife. That's what Weissman does. I mean, he's just a disgusting prosecutorial pig.
Let me jump over to Trump's tax returns. Again, I've got a view on this that maybe not everybody shares, but since a nearly two-year investigation did exonerate, quote-unquote, Trump, well, it's not quote-unquote, it did exonerate him for Russian collusion, and it didn't find any obstruction, what's the justification for the Democrats demanding his tax returns? Do they have any legal grounds to do this, or just more grandstanding? I mean, the time to vet someone is when he's running for office, not 2 years after he's been in office. So,
well,
the House have to have a reasonable justification to do this?
They have to have a valid legislative purpose, and just being curious is not enough. Since he was exonerated of Russian collusion, and since there is no evidence that he has broken any other law before or after being president, and since their job in reviewing tax returns is for a specific reason involving a particular piece of legislation, they're not entitled to these tax returns, and they're not going to get them. And it is an outrageous abuse of their power, But that's where the Democrats are. They're drunk with the power that they now have, and they're acting like maniacs. And there is absolutely no reason that they need to see his tax returns. Nothing involving Mueller involved tax returns, and there's no reason for them to get them. The fact that they have a prurient interest in his tax returns does not make that a valid legislative reason for them to get them. They're not going to get them.
Okay, two last questions, Joe. Let's switch gears for a minute. You've been around Washington for a long time. Have you ever seen or heard anything like Chief Justice John Roberts' attack on Donald Trump? The way I look at it is everything Trump said about the left-leaning bias of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals was true. So if Roberts truly was an unbiased judge who was sincerely interested in judicial fairness instead of attacking Trump, it seems to me he should have met with the Ninth Circuit judges and said something like, hey, look, you guys, this got to stop. You have to make judgments based on the law, not your personal ideological beliefs. So why do you think Roberts made the decision to openly attack Trump instead?
I don't know, but he never should have done it. That was a terrible mistake for the Chief Justice to become involved in the political discussion about how the President of the United States views judges. When the Chief Justice said there are no Republican judges, there are no Democratic judges, there are no liberal judges, there are no – that was just nonsense. And he sounded and looked like a fool when he did it. And he realized that he'd made a mistake after he'd said it, and he shut up. And he should shut up for the rest of his term and just be quiet. If the President of the United States wants to criticize the Ninth Circuit, that's fine. They're all big people. They have lifetime appointments. The President can't remove them. I don't know why – the Chief Justice was so concerned. It's because he just wants to be relevant for some reason. He did that with Obamacare when he changed his vote and decided to uphold it using some strange, bizarre logic that the penalty was actually a tax. The thing about Roberts is he's a bit of a martinet and a bit of a little smart aleck. And the truth is he became Chief Justice too young and thinks a little bit too much of himself. And his criticism of the President was completely unjustified, outrageous, and, in my opinion, a violation of judicial ethics.
Yeah, it was a shocker for sure. One final question while we're talking about the Supreme Court. What about the Democrats? Because this got a lot of people nervous. So I want to know your legal view on this. What about the Democrats threat to pack the court if they regain the Senate? Do you believe there's a legal way for them to actually do that? I guess it's not in the Constitution. And conversely, also tell us if there's a legal way for Republicans to stop it.
Well, you have to get, if they want to change by legislation the number of justices on the Supreme Court, they can do that. Will they try to do that? I doubt it. I think it would cause such a constitutional crisis and be so transparently obvious why they were doing it that it just would be impossible. I think they would probably have a revolt among the moderate Democrats in the Senate, and it would be physically impossible. I also don't think they could get it through the House of Representatives. Remember, it has to go through two houses. It's a piece of legislation that changed the number. I think the public debate over that, just like eliminating the Electoral College, it's just – at least the Electoral College, you have to do a constitutional amendment. That's never going to happen. But on packing the court with an increased number of liberal justices, I just don't think it's ever going to happen.
I want to thank you for sharing your thoughts with us today. You have a ton of great stuff to think about, and I hope you visit with us again real soon.
Anytime. Thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. Take care.